Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. River guides are a rare breed, people who perpetually choose whitewater adventure over conventional security. In a new book, author Joe Durbrock examines the lives of two career river guides and their ultimate challenge on the Salmon River. And today on the program, Durbrock joins us to talk about wild water, thrill-seeking, and freedom. And Joe Durbrock, welcome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Joe Durbrock is an award-winning author and former whitewater raft guide herself. She's contributed to the Washington Post, the Christian Science Monitor, Paddler Magazine, and other publications. Her book is titled Anything Worth Doing, and it is the winner of the 2012 National Outdoor Book Award in the nonfiction adventure narrative category. She joins us by phone from her home in Boise, Idaho, and she'll be reading from her book Anything Worth Doing tomorrow, December 14th at 6 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble in Layton. We'll give you more details on that as we go. But you can join our conversation. Are you a river rat? What are your favorite runs? And why do you think the whitewater has such appeal for so many? 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Joe Durbrock, I'd like you to start by reading a passage from the book. You were once a guide in Idaho, and you called your home the Blue Ghetto, sort of your home during the river running season. Set it up for us, read for us, and then we'll talk about this passage.
Yeah, so the Blue Ghetto was where guides lived on the Locksaw River, which is a beautiful, wild little river up in central Idaho. It's an early season river, so we would go there before the summer season began. And this is a little description of the people at the Blue Ghetto, okay?
All right.
The denizens of the Blue Ghetto were whitewater raft guides, many of us career guides, as we like to point out to one another. We were not working summer jobs until something better came along. We were living the life. We might not own much, but neither were we owned. We might not be eligible for credit cards. People without permanent addresses tend not to be. But credit cards looked like bad magic, the real-life lamp with the prankster genie inside. So the ghetto in Blue Ghetto was ironic. We were proud of our poverty and what it bought.
That's Joe Durbrock reading from her new book, Anything Worth Doing. So the river guide is a unique personality, right?
You know, I'm not sure how unique the personality is. I think it's very Western, the love of wilderness and the love of independence and the love of freedom. Don't you think, Jennifer?
I do. I mean, the descriptions in your book really show that that kind of wild streak and the adrenaline rush that you get from the whitewater. But also, it takes a certain kind of person to want to have solitude in nature in the way that you do when you run the river.
I think it does take a unique kind of person to want to live that way day after day after day. You know, what most of us do, what I do now, because I quit guiding 10 years ago, what most of us do is we go commune with nature or we go for our adrenaline rush on the weekends. I do admire, and I think the people are pretty unique that do that day after day, year after year.
Speaking with Joe Durbrock, she is the author of the book Anything Worth Doing. It is the winner of the 2012 National Outdoor Book Award, and she'll be reading from the volume on Friday. That's tomorrow, December 14th at 6 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble in Layton, 1780 Woodland Park Drive. And if you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking about river running and the professional river guide. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. So your book focuses on two of these professional career river guides, John Barker and Clancy Reese. Briefly, introduce us to these two men.
Yes. So Clancy Reese, at the time that I heard of him, was a 27-year guiding veteran. He was 50 years old, and this was basically what he'd been doing his entire life. And he was kind of a legend in the region. His friend, John Barker, actually learned to boat, was a child in Clancy's boat and learned to boat from this man, and then grew up into an extreme big water adventure boater in his own right.
And so these two decided to embark on an adventure together. Can you describe what their ambition was?
Yeah, I really love this. They loved Idaho's Salmon River, which is a 425-mile-long, wild, free river in Idaho. But these guys were big thinkers, and they were like, well, okay, so the Salmon River technically ends where it meets the Snake River, but that's just a name game. Really, that water goes to the Pacific. So their big adventure was to build a dory that would run the white water of the Salmon, and then they were going to hoist sail and run down the dammed reservoirs of the Snake, down the dammed reservoirs of the Columbia, clear to the Pacific, escort the Salmon to the Pacific, 900-odd miles.
900 miles on a boat. You write that this idea was nuts.
It was nuts because of those dams on the Snake and the Columbia. The Salmon, what makes the Salmon a really unique river in this country and rare in the world, is that it is completely wild, free, no dams, and navigable its entire length. Not incredibly difficult either at most water levels. But the Snake and Columbia together, those lower reaches, that's 400 plus miles of reservoir, and these guys, they're non-motorized. They wanted to do a human-powered journey. I mean, imagine 400-plus miles of lake.
What was the motivation? Was it simple curiosity? Was it just the thrill of being able to say, we did 900 miles, including 400 of highly developed waterways?
They had a variety of motivations, and the ones that made the most sense to me, that resonated the best with me, were first that they loved the Salmon so much that they needed to do something extravagant to show how important this river was to them, like escort the waters of the Salmon to the sea. Another reason was that, they did this journey back in 1988, and this was before anyone was talking about pulling dams off of rivers. But these were boatmen, and boatmen are pretty well known for not liking dams much. So I think another reason was to sort of, in spite of these dams, make this journey that years ago would have been a very reasonable journey.
Remind me how you heard about their story, and what was it about this story that really intrigued you and encouraged you to seek out John and to retell their story?
Well, the first I heard of the story was that Clancy Reese had died. I didn't know the man, but I was guiding, and the guiding grapevine is very efficient. So word came ripping down the grapevine that a really consummate boatman had died, and that he had died on the Salmon River, a river that he knew extremely well. And that he had died of hypothermia, basically lack of, he hadn't had the right gear on. I was confused. A lot of people were confused and kind of angry about this. And so years later, I tracked John Barker down. I didn't know him either, but I tracked him down to ask him about it. I thought there might be a story worth telling there. I didn't know. And John starts telling me not about how Clancy Reese died on a river he knew so well of hypothermia, but how these guys had journeyed together for 10 years and about this story. And the arc of that story seemed to me both more troubling than I had expected and much, much more beautiful.
What troubled you about it?
Partly what I just said, that the man died in a way that you don't think an expert boatman ought to die. But the bigger reason was this. Clancy was 51 when he died, and especially as I was working on this book, I was 40. And I was thinking really hard about, what's the future for a career guide? What do you do if you are living a young person's dream and you run out of youth? So had Clancy lived, like, what did his future look like? Where would he have, I mean, the man can't retire. He doesn't have a 401k. He doesn't have medical insurance. He had a house, but he didn't really own anything to furnish that house. So I guess that was the big thing that troubled me, was that I didn't really have an answer to my own question, which was, why is this a tragedy, and if so, why?
Hmm. We're speaking with Jo Durbrock. She is the author of the new book, Anything Worth Doing, and she'll be reading from the book tomorrow, Friday, December 14th at 6 o'clock in Layton at the Barnes & Noble there. And you can join our conversation if you're a river rat. What keeps you going back to the river? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Would you describe John Barker's and Clancy Reese's relationship as bosom buddies, as friends? Were they colleagues? How did they interact with each other when they were on the river and off?
That was another part of the story that I thought was really beautiful. So Clancy helped teach John Barker how to boat, really helped raise this boy into a man. And John idolized this guy. Clancy was big. He was really, really capable, really smart. People admired him, and John idolized him as a child. Then as he grew up, these two become colleagues, friends, and then adventuring partners. And I think that's beautiful. But I also think it's beautiful that, like, for instance, John was my primary source for the book. John knew Clancy well, he would say. I'm sure that he knew Clancy well. But he didn't know that Clancy wrote poetry, for instance. These guys' relationship was completely contained and centered on rivers.
You actually,
I think that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And you actually were able to go to his home, such as it was, and find some documents that his brother was able to retrieve from his belongings and to share with you. And you've included some of those poems and some of his writing in the book. Why did you decide to do that?
I thought it was so beautiful, the story Clancy's little brother told me, which was that he'd been given Clancy's house by the family, because Clancy said if anything ever happened to him, his house should go to his brother. So it was given to him. He goes there. And the way I picture it anyway, the place is just drifted up with bits and scraps of paper, like fall leaves or something. And these are journals, they're poems, they're little aphorisms. And some of them are quite beautiful. And none of them were ready for publication, but it did seem to me that some of them were sort of intended to work in that direction. So in answer to your question, why is some of Clancy's poetry in the book? First of all, I think it does a really beautiful job of saying how complex and interesting this guy is, but also I think he would have loved it. I think he would have loved it.
Hmm. We've only got a few seconds left, but is there a moral to this story?
I think the moral to the story for me, I don't know for a reader, but for me, the moral is live what you love, but expect to pay a price.
Jo Durbrock, she is the author of the new book, Anything Worth Doing. It's the winner of the 2012 National Outdoor Book Award, and she'll be reading on Friday, December 14th at 6 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble in Layton, 1780 Woodland Park Drive. Jo, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it.
Jennifer, thank you so much. That was fun.
City Views is a production of KCPW in Salt Lake City. Our technical director is Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.